Hello, welcome to the New Stack Makers, a podcast where we talk about at-scale application development, deployment, and management.
Hello, and welcome to another fantastic TNS Makers podcast from the New Stack. I'm Daryl Taft, news editor of the New Stack, here with my colleague and co-host, TNS editor-in-chief, Job Jackson. What's up, Job?
Hey, not much, just gathering the news.
All right. Well, today's episode covers Microsoft's low-code software development strategy. And our very special guest is Charles LaManna, Microsoft's corporate VP of Business Apps and Platform. So again, we welcome you for an exciting and informative podcast connecting you and others. So Charles, good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me, Daryl. Really excited to be on the show today.
Always. Yeah. I got a lot to say about you, but that'll come later.
Good things, I hope.
Nothing but. So just want to get from the start. How long has Microsoft been in the low-code game? And did it precede you, or when did you come in?
I'd say low-code is interesting because there's really like multiple generations of low-code. So if you go back to Excel and Visual Basic and Access, Microsoft's been in the game for 25, 30 years, for quite some time. I mean, of course, the low-code market's changed a lot from then. You had the emergence of cloud and mobile over time. And we're really in what I would call the third generation of low-code over the last 4 or 5 years or so. And that's when Microsoft has really gone big in the enterprise when it comes to low-code development. And that's when things like the Power Platform, which includes Power Apps, Power BI, Power Automate, Power Virtual Agent, all bursts on the scene to really go widespread and broad for anybody who uses a PC or anybody who uses Office 365 to start using low-code tools to build some pretty exciting and interesting solutions. And that third generation is where I've really been engaged and involved on the Microsoft side around the Power Platform, and that journey from just a few small ideas to now something that's used quite broadly, you know, 97% of the Fortune 500.
Well, that's the thing. We get a lot of talk about low code, no code is now mainstream. Do you see that?
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting because it's really gone mainstream for two reasons. The first is just the workforce. The typical office or information worker has an appetite and a hunger to go build out their own solutions with low-code technology in a way which just wasn't as true 20 years ago. There are 300 or 400 million office workers out there who want to solve their IT and digital challenges when they're not being solved by developers, and they're looking for tools like low-code to go do that. And that's really pulled it to the mainstream. So that's kind of the demand side of it. But then the second is just the technology landscape has really changed to a point where it's actually possible for easy API connectivity, easy data integration, things like AI-assisted development, like we have with Power Apps Ideas or GitHub Copilot, where AI actually helps you develop a solution. So the technology and the demand have kind of both met at this really unique point in time, which has just driven this rapid exponential growth of these no-code, low-code tools. And you see it in large companies like at Microsoft, but also with the deluge of startups and venture capital being deployed towards no-code, low-code companies, because it's just top of mind for so many companies right now.
Who is your primary user base? Are these developers who just need to get stuff done really quickly? Are they business managers? Are they the mid-level office employees?
That's a great question, Joe. And what's amazing is the vast majority of our low-code, no-code users are business analysts, business users, the same types of people who send emails, do spreadsheets, do PowerPoint presentations. And the stat we've shared is that's about 80% of Power Platform users are those business users, business analysts. And about 20% are professional developers or IT-related, more technical folks. And what's fascinating is that's higher than we actually expected, because there's about 10 times as many, if not more, business analysts and business users than there are pro devs. So we'd expect closer to a 90-10 split at the limit, but that's really what we're seeing right now. And what they're trying to do is just, people are tired of dealing with terrible software at work and having to use difficult, monotonous tasks, which could just be automated, or being unable to go slice and dice data. And that's where Power BI, Power Apps, and Power Automate in particular really shine, because they make it so any office worker or any business user can do all of those things.
Can you talk about how this all works together? You just mentioned Power Apps, Power BI, and I know there are other Microsoft business applications that work together with the Power Platform, like Teams. Can you just talk about how an enterprise could build an app using the Microsoft portfolio?
Yep. And for, I know I jumped probably too much right into the product, so maybe I'll spend a second walking through each of them. So at Microsoft, about 4 or 5 years ago, we started to launch different Power Platform products. And in 2019, we actually came out and declared the Power Platform as the low-code development platform for Microsoft. And we did that by actually bringing together a few different products and capabilities. And those four main products are Power BI, Power Apps, Power Automate, and Power Virtual Agent. In the case of Power BI, it provides a simple low-code experience to create beautiful visualizations and reports, as well as to analyze all of your data. In the case of Power Apps, it provides a simple low-code experience to do web and mobile application development that can connect to all your existing data sources through API, as well as to go create new additional data. We have Power Automate, which is a low-code robotic process automation or RPA tool, which can run workflows either in the cloud or on the desktop. And last but not least, we have Power Virtual Agent for a low-code chatbots and conversational experience. And all four of these come together so that our customers can analyze, act, and automate on the data and processes that matter to them most. And what's interesting is that we took a lot of the design elements from Office, so Word and Excel and PowerPoint and Visio, where people are already comfortable with visual surfaces to design and define processes and experiences. And we use that inside of all of the Power Platform. If you use Power Apps, it'll feel just like Excel and PowerPoint had a baby. You have a formula bar, you have a drag and drop experience and a visual experience. And what we've realized is that a typical solution needs to draw from all four corners of the Power Platform. You need to create an application experience with Power Apps. You need to go do workflow and automation with Power Automate. And you want to analyze all the data and processes through Power BI. They all come together to make it really easy to transform each and every part of every company, no matter how technical you are.
All right, good stuff. So you mentioned that you're using Excel, and you know other low-code players are looking at other options, other approaches. And I know AWS is also using a spreadsheet sort of thing with their Honey Code, which hasn't really gotten off the ground yet. And I don't expect you to comment on that. But why is a spreadsheet a better foundation for a low-code platform?
Yeah. And a big part of it is, where are users coming from? And when we go out for building tools that can work for both citizen developers, which are just business users, so people who their day job isn't writing code, or IT pros and coders, if we use UI patterns and paradigms that they're already familiar with, the learning curve is so much less. They don't have to go out and watch hours and hours and hours of training to figure out how things work. They don't have to go to courses. They just drop into an experience which looks familiar. And what we've realized is, if you want to go reach the next billion low-code developers, we can't do it by requiring a whole bunch of training. And instead, we have to go build on the shoulders of giants in computing where people are already familiar and used to it. So simple things like having a tabular spreadsheet-like experience to explore data, or having a search bar at the top, which I just can click on to go find information in all the different user experiences, or even the ability to go drag and drop controls and snap to grids like I'm used to inside of PowerPoint, is just the best way to make it as easy to get started. And what we've seen at Microsoft, and no doubt many other competitors in the low-code space, is just the easier you can make it on day one, the more likely it is for someone to come back on day two, day three, day 100, day 1,000. So it's all about that getting started experience, making it as simple and familiar as possible.
What sorts of applications are you seeing users deploy this platform for? Are they kind of taking on building their own versions of complicated programs, or is it just little bits that they can't find from existing functionality elsewhere?
And it's a big spread. And I would say generally, the guidance we give is if there is an app available on the shelf to do something, like as a SaaS product, go get that. The beauty of low code in the Power Platform is to go fill in all the gaps between your apps, because you may have 100 different business applications and 200 different SaaS products in the enterprise, but to run your business efficiently and truly be digitally transformed, you probably need 10 to 20,000 different applications and workflows. And there's not going to be something off the shelf for all of those. And that broad set of use cases is where low code tools really shine, because you could never go chase them with code first or pro dev based implementation solutions, because it would just take too long and cost too much money. So the real opportunity we see for low code is particularly around internal line of business applications.
Huh.
And to give an example, like we're not going to build Outlook or Teams on Power Apps at Microsoft, but we're going to run the 10,000 different processes that we have around HR and finance and customer support and sales planning on Power Apps, because they're the only way for us to actually build out a tailored, targeted, specific application experience.
Yeah. So that question leads into one of the ones I want to ask later on, but it's relevant here. How does a team of non-technical, no professional developers fit in a fusion development team? Some people call it a delivery team. Where do they sit?
Yeah, we see it kind of spread from company to company, depending largely on, I think, how aggressive they've been in the past around embracing either citizen development and low-code development, or even just their digital transformation strategy. But we see a few different places. So one is inside of their office administrators. So the people who are your SharePoint admins or run your Exchange and Teams configuration, they'll also do double duty running things like the Center of Excellence for Low Code and also having engineering resources which can participate and contribute to Fusion teams. But we also sometimes see customers embrace having support come from an app delivery or standard application development team. So the folks who used to build with code a lot of different internal systems or internal services, they'll now build code and write code, but they'll also provide support for business users who need more complex and sophisticated capabilities from them to be integrated into their solution, or they'll consult and work with business users as they build out these solutions. And one of the things that is a little bit unique in our worldview for low code is that you need to have a single platform which can span from the business user all the way to the professional developer with no cliffs in between. And that means you can easily have the whole company collaborating and working together in one place, on one platform, on these low-code solutions. So even if you start in a weird way in the wrong part of the company, you can easily evolve and pivot to a configuration which works. I mean, I really haven't seen one size fits all. I've seen a bunch, but the biggest thing is you don't want to have either side working on their own. You don't want to have your business users going out and using low code tools on an island, and you don't want your pro devs and IT professionals going out on an island and using low code tools either. The real magic happens when they come together and interlock in these fusion teams where you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I got you. And yeah, just for definition, for people that may not know or be familiar, a fusion team is a team of people from the pro development side, the IT pro side, who are pretty big in tech, and business analysts, some of those that are also kind of techie, but also just non-coders, you know, clerical workers and such that want to pick up a way to help and build and maybe grow in the organization. So can you talk about how pro devs use your low-code tools and how it differs from, you know, the non-tech people?
Yeah, a big part is pro coders and developers, they use low-code in conjunction with their other pro code and dev tools. Because that's a big story we always try to emulate, which is this idea of it's not either or, it's and. It's not low-code or pro code or low-code or cloud infrastructure. It's low code and pro code, low code and cloud infrastructure. And by embracing them together, professional developers can just move a heck of a lot faster than they ever have before. And we have some great studies where it shows from Forrester at like 1/7 the cost and 1/7 the time to go build out a solution. If you have your developers embrace low code tools as part of their tool chain when they go out and build solutions. And the way this really shows up is I'll use Power Apps as an example. They'll build the user experience and the logic around the user experience inside of Power App, because it's very easy to create an application which works in the browser, on Android and iOS, without you having to become an expert on Swift or Objective-C or learning what's the best way to use React or Angular to build a user experience. You can just go quickly drag and drop and snap those things together in the Power Apps experience. But for more sophisticated logic or integrations or machine learning that you may want in the application, instead of trying to fit that into Power Apps, we have customers who will go deploy those into cloud infrastructure providers like Azure or AWS, and then they will register the components inside of Power Apps using something we call custom connectors or the Power Apps component framework, where they can have code first, code heavy components, which are hosted elsewhere, show up inside the low code dev environment. That way you can call all the APIs and microservices you built elsewhere, or use the JavaScript and TypeScript controls you built in the past right inside that low code environment. That way you don't have to compromise, and you can keep your developers as productive as possible working in the environments which they feel most comfortable in. And you can build solutions at an incredible rate. And of course, as a side effect of that, you need to make sure the low code environment supports integration with source control. So we support GitHub integration and Git integration, as well as the ability to go do things like CI/CD. All really comes together to create a compelling tool chain that lets a developer just use whatever makes the most sense that's on their workbench to get the job done. And if there's anything we can always count on, is developers are always seeking for the easiest, fastest, simplest way to solve a problem. And low code is the easiest, fastest, simplest solution for a lot of different challenges that they face.
Okay. So how do you bring the non-sophisticated low coder into that DevOps CI/CD world? I know you guys had introduced something recently, and I don't know if you've gotten any further with that, but that's a challenge.
Absolutely. I'd say if you take the typical Excel user and introduce them to Git, they'll run away screaming, because it's a pretty challenging environment compared to the standard Office of Productivity tools. So one of the things that we've worked on is how can we have a single project which exists inside of source control like Git, but the business analyst or business user can live entirely inside the low code environment. And what we've done and what we've shipped fairly recently is the ability where people can be inside the Power Apps Visual Studio to build all of those different experiences. And the changes are being saved back to a different Git branch. And then when they want to go promote it to production, they can make a request, and that actually triggers a pull request on the back end. And as a result, all the standard CI/CD processes like running automated tests can trigger and work. So in this way, you can have pro devs and business users working on a single project at the same time, and they can both live in the worlds which make the most sense to them. The business user lives in an office-like, purely visual drag-and-drop experience, and the pro dev can live in a source control, Visual Studio Code, GitHub environment, and it just works. And I'd say we're just now pushing the envelope on this with our recent announcements into preview over the last 3-6 months, but there's a lot more left to do, so you can have everybody in the organization work together on a single project and bring what they know best. Because that's the whole, to me, that's the big change in how development works in the future with low code, is that it's a full company activity, not just IT, not just the devs. Every single discipline, every single department will play a role and participate in digital transformation for every company. And that's the only way we're going to get there, because the demand is way too big and there's way too few developers in the world to go help every company really achieve their ambitions when it comes to digital solutions.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like you at Microsoft may be at least the only one I see who is pushing this strategy to that extent. And it's probably because you have the tooling to do it. So how does Visual Studio play into this whole thing? And will there be any enhancements or tools or add-ins for Visual Studio that can help out with this?
Absolutely. And we have the, because since it's very much an and between Visual Studio and the Power Platform Visual Experiences, we have extensions and add-ins inside of both VS Code as well as Visual Studio. In the case of Visual Studio, we support the ability to register code plugins, which will run inside of Dataverse, which is our low-code data platform, which powers the Power Platform. And there's a great add-in, which helps you write unit tests and helps you get the right scaffolding and the right contracts deployed. And we also have controls inside of VS Code to go create custom visual components based on JavaScript and TypeScript, as well as to go build things for Power Apps portals or Power BI visuals to test and deploy them right from inside of the VS Code experience. And that is probably 30% of the surface area of the Power Platform. Over time, it will absolutely get to 100%, because what we've learned is that every single piece of the Power Platform needs to have an escape hatch to code, because that's the only way we can remove all barriers and blocks for adoption of low-code solutions. And it's the only way we can make sure that developers get excited by the Power Platform as opposed to dreading it, because that's what developers want. When they hit a wall or they hit an edge, they don't want to be stuck. They want the ability to go crack open the code and go make changes.
So at the lower end, how approachable is the solution for the non-techie person?
Very approachable. But of course, I'm going to say that as the guy that works on it. But the thing I would say is we have some truly remarkable stories from folks that wouldn't be classic IT background, really embracing the Power Platform and digitally transforming organizations. Like, we have Sumit Saini, who is a security guard at Heathrow Airport, who taught himself how to use Power Apps off of YouTube. And as a result, he was able to really transform and remove a whole bunch of paper, the processes associated with security, and even move on to ultimately an IT role at the organization to go help the company transform. Or principals at schools. So here locally in the Tacoma area, we had a principal or assistant principal who was able to go build out Power Apps and Power Automate solutions, which ultimately digitized all kinds of processes inside of the school, which improved the service, improved the outcome, and was something that they were able to do despite having no computer science and no technology background. Or to the other side of the world, I just saw an amazing story around a organization which helps deliver hearing aids to Indigenous people in Australia. And one of the big challenges they had was it was heavily pen and paper, heavily spreadsheet based, that type of thing. But they were able to go dramatically improve the efficiency of the system by using Power Apps and Power Automate. And there's just story after story after story of someone with no technology background picking up these tools, using their deep understanding of the business challenges and processes, because they come from the business. They're solving the problems they deal with every day. And they use these tools to create some remarkable solutions, advance their careers, and really accelerate how their company operates in a way that just wasn't possible and isn't possible with a spreadsheet or anything else that's maybe been around for the last couple of decades.
What are the security implications for the administrator who wants to put this platform into place?
That is one of the most important considerations for widespread adoption, because a lot of our users remember the chaos of end user computing from 20 years ago with Access databases and Lotus Notes and Excel workbooks running rampant and really being unable to manage how people were building solutions and what those solutions did. And then 10 years down the line, paying a big price to clean them up and streamline them and improve them. But there's some good news about low code in this day and age. And I talked about this at the very beginning, this idea of, you know, I really view it as three big generations of low code over the last 25 years, starting with the PC era, and then I would say the SaaS browser era, and then the modern cloud connected mobile era as like the three big chunks. And that cloud era really makes it easy to govern centrally, because every single solution that gets built in the case of the Power Platform is visible to the IT administrator. It's cloud hosted, cloud managed, cloud deployed. So you can see everything that's happening and ensure that your policies are being followed. So things like data loss prevention or DLP, or things like information protection to protect particular data records, can be implemented centrally and enforced globally. So that means that you can really embrace this bottoms-up business user-led development in a large organization without completely losing control, because your policies are in place and you can see everything. And that cloud delivery, cloud managed, cloud infrastructure is just the secret sauce to making low code go mainstream, because it's not, you're not running into IT departments that are trying to lock this down. They're not saying no low code development because of security risks. They're saying yes, low code development with my controls in place. And the analogy we always make is you'd much rather have a regulated innovation free market internally as opposed to an unregulated or closed economy. So that's what we're help our customers go on from a Microsoft perspective. And particularly in the mid-market and up, this is the number one concern and the number one enabler. Because once you work through all these details of how do you govern it and have things like a center of excellence, can really have everybody just build as much as they can, as fast as they can, and as much as they need to transform their day-to-day job and ultimately go help improve the department, their line of business.
So can you talk about what happened with that security glitch that Power Platform experienced and anything that you guys had to do to fix that or address it?
Yeah, so I think you're probably referring to last fall, there was a setting on Power Apps portals where it was possible to configure anonymous access to your data. And what that means is if you have the setting enabled, people potentially outside the organization could connect and look at that information. And what happened was there was a few customers who had this setting enabled. So not a security glitch in terms of an issue or a leakage, but a misconfiguration. So that's something that happened last year. And what's interesting is two things that we really worked on and helped our customers with as part of that. The first is making sure that you have these governance controls in place. Because by default, for Power Apps, an application cannot be used outside of your organization, outside your Azure Active Directory tenant. Only by using a Power App portal can you then publish, with this setting on, can you then publish data outside. So having governance controls about who can build applications that get published externally is a major component of it. And that's one of the things which is available inside the Power Platform Admin Center. The second thing is that we have a really rich, say, secure by default settings approach. Because our goal is always, we want to make it so on day one, when you build your first app, that app is secure. And that's where the secure defaults become a major component and a major part of how we go help our customers build these great solutions, which also are secure. Because but the thing we always say internally is we make it very easy to build something. We also need to make it very easy to build a secure solution and a compliant solution and a performance solution, and all those other fundamentals components are a major part of it. So within that kind of context, I would just say the biggest learning I'd push out there is you want to be proactive with your low code strategy as opposed to reactive. And by being proactive, you can define policies and rules and governance. And that's the best way to encourage innovation in a secure way. And the second thing is, have a strong posture around your data, because managing access to your data, whether it's at the database layer or at the API layer, that is the heart and the most sensitive information that you can manage. So having a good API and data strategy helps not only with your low code, but also your general cloud adoption journey. So I think those are probably the two main things I would say that are important to go work through. And of course, features we have inside of the Power Platform, like the Admin Center, Center of Excellence Toolkit, and the portals and App Checker, which check for security and performance issues, are all great tools to make this more attainable for each and every company out there.
I'm interested in the intersection of AI and your low-code approach. Yeah, I know you guys are working with the AI company, and there's some things that you're doing. There's some things that GitHub's doing with Copilot. Are they working in parallel, or are there some things that you're going to share? How does that work out?
Yeah. And I think this is probably one of the most exciting areas in all forms of development, no code, low code, and pro code. And it's this idea of AI assisted development. Both GitHub through GitHub Copilot and the Power Platform through Power Apps Ideas, which is a way where you can basically use natural language to describe data queries or actions and will automatically generate those for you without having to know any syntax or formula. Or in the case of GitHub Copilot, you can provide, it's like an IntelliSense, but trained on a massive AI, and it can do multi-line prediction. These two things come together and are great examples of how AI can help developers of all kinds and all stripes move faster. And in our case at Microsoft, we actually, these are shared components and shared models. And there's some differences specific to the domain, like a code first environment versus a no code first environment, but it's infrastructure and technology and research that we share equally across both. And that's one of the most exciting things about being able to work at low code at Microsoft is we have access to these unbelievable research components, unbelievable infrastructure, which is just hard to match and really allows us to dream big. I mean, when we first demoed the Power Apps Ideas capability, people almost couldn't believe it, how transformative it was, where you can basically talk and describe in natural language what you want to have happen, and we'll do it. And we'll show you in a visual way what's been constructed and queried. And on top of that, it gets better all the time, because this is an organic, evolving model that gets better within the bounds of what we have available from information we feed into it, and then what customers choose to share with us to go improve and enrich the experience. So this amazing, iterative, growing assistive technology has come from not even being a part of the product to being used by over 20% of Power Apps users as part of authoring their solutions in less than a year. It's pretty amazing and pretty rapid adoption for something like that, and is one of the best applications of these large-scale natural language generative models like GPT-3 from OpenAI that we've seen in the market so far.
So is OpenAI working closely with you on this? Are they, I mean, you have teams that are tied together?
Yeah, I think they work closely with us because it's part of a broader partnership at the Microsoft level. And there's boundaries in terms of what is shared and what goes into Microsoft and what goes back to OpenAI, which are too complicated even for me to kind of go deep on. But what's great is that we're able to work together in a way where we help accelerate the state of the art in the industry through OpenAI. And also OpenAI is able to work with us to actually go drive improvement of real world processes and not just in a pure research context. So I think it's a really natural partnership between the two companies because we get customer value, customer demand, and also testing and validation of some of the high-end AI thinking. And also we have OpenAI being able to independently push the envelope on cutting-edge models and research, particularly around natural language generation. So I'm super excited. That was a big announcement I think Satya did about a year and a half ago, about the partnership between the two companies, Satya and Nadella, our CEO at Microsoft. And it's really a Microsoft-wide partnership. So And I'm really excited to see how it continues to evolve. It's definitely one of the most exciting parts of the no-code, low-code space.
Yeah, I know. And you guys seem to be ahead of a bunch of people. You came from behind, but you know, in the Microsoft way, kind of eclipse some folks. I know we need to wrap this up, but what kind of adoption do you see? I know you've grown a ton since we first talked.
Yeah, so like the stats I love to share is 92% of the Fortune 500 uses Power App. 97% of the Fortune 500 uses the Power Platform. We have over 10 million Power Apps monthly active users. And these are all numbers that grow each and every month. We think that these are big numbers, but we're just scratching the surface of the potential. I really think that there will be a billion low-code developers in the fullness of time. And basically anyone who has a smartphone or a PC, they're going to have some kind of low-code development. So big numbers, broad penetration, shows up all over the place, but it's still early innings. And that's what gets me out of bed in the morning, super excited to come to work, because yes, we have this broad adoption, but there's a billion other people I want to go get hooked on low code over the next couple of years.
Well, that's my last question. I mean, you're talking about a billion. How many of those are going to be Microsoft's customers?
I would say the idea would be there's over a billion Windows customers, as an example, or users, I would say, over a billion Windows users. We definitely can go get over 1 billion Power Platform users and makers as well. And I think what that looks like, it'll have to be not only just pure enterprise or mid-market, but we'll really have to make sure that low code is accessible to both consumer environments as well as small business and very small business. So kind of really covering that whole spectrum to make sure that no matter the size of your company or no matter how small or big your problem, that you can use low code is going to be how we can bring Power Platform to everybody.
Well, there you heard it. I think I've worked 3 years to get him to give me that number.
You're nothing if persistent, Daryl.
We got there. Anyway, thank you. I really want to thank you for that. And thanks to all the listeners. Thanks for all of your support and feedback. Another dynamic podcast from TNS. And we look forward to having you on the next one, the next Makers Podcast. This is the place to bring your news, to bring your information and the things that you want to share with the world. This is TNS. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on Simplecast to listen to more episodes on the New Stack Makers. Create and share your favorite audiogram using our Simplecast player. For more articles and great stories, go to thenewstack.io.